So, are you still waiting for that $1 million Bitcoin? No, we're waiting for mass adoption. Whatever the price is of Bitcoin when mass adoption happens, I think we're going to be all a lot less concerned about what it's priced at in dollars versus what we can actually buy with it. And if it happens to be what we consider $1 million worth of stuff now, great. But just keep reminding yourself, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. So there are a lot of people speaking into the crypto space right now. It had been quiet for a while, but I think maybe the guys who are the big heavy investors in this thing realize, we got to pick everybody up. We got to keep people going. The volume has dropped a lot. It looks like demand has tapered off for Bitcoin, although there is a lot of activity in places like the Lightning Network showing that the expansion there is happening, the speed of transactions is real. And there are a lot of other things like yen.io that are being built that are going to facilitate transactions of cryptocurrencies between people, peer to peer and lots of other ways. So there are things going on, and there are new wallets being built, and there's just all kinds of ideas that are coming forth. So now in this time of building, you shouldn't be worried so much about the price and whether it's going to go up or down. If you are, let's go ahead and jump here into a few articles. We're going to talk about a number of guys who say, just everybody, hold on, stay the course. This is going somewhere. Then we'll talk about John McAfee and his crazy presidential plans. We'll also talk about what's going on with this exchange up in Canada. This thing is getting weird. Maybe it's getting weird. Maybe it started weird. Anyway, it's weird. So we're going to talk about it. Okay, so as we do every time, we start with Feedly. There are a lot of interesting things. I'm sitting here in CCN today because there are a number of interesting articles. Mario Gamers Rejoice. I don't know why that's here, but I'll have to save that article for my son. Let's go over here to what the billionaires have to say. Oh, jumped up to the top. I read about halfway down. I thought it was pretty interesting. It's just basically a bunch of guys that we all know telling us, chill out, people. It's going to be fine. We'll start with a billionaire, a Bitcoin bull, Mike Novogratz, and he wants us to stay the course. Yeah, it's bitter cold, but hang on, everybody. Mike Novogratz, the CEO of cryptocurrency merchant bank Galaxy Digital, admits that the crypto winter will probably last longer than he anticipates. He's like the groundhog. What's a yeah, Punxsutawney Paul or something? I just offended a bunch of people in New York or wherever that groundhog lives. However, the Goldman Sachs alum still believes that institutional investors will eventually enter the market and remains an avowed Bitcoin bull. He tweeted, "Don't think we head north for at least a few more months. Always takes longer for institutions to move." Now, that's interesting because there are other rumors out there that suggest that maybe May is the point at which the institutions jump in. I think between now and then, there's a potential for a lot to happen on the currency front. As we know, there's been a ton of activity. Well, if you follow it, but there's been a ton of activity the last couple of weeks in the precious metals market, specifically around gold. Look down at Venezuela. We're always looking down there. They're trying to get their gold back. And of course, this is Maduro doing this and his rival. I can't remember the guy's name. Somebody will fill me in. I could jump over and that would just end to a new tab and look it up. Somebody said I was stupid for not doing that recently, but we got to stay focused. Anyway, they've been trying to get gold back from Bank of London. Maduro's been trying to sell gold to maybe to the Russians in order to pay off his debts and not his personal debts, but the country's debts, and maybe get some additional capital to avoid the sanctions the U.S. is putting on them. So there's a lot going on in the metals market that's driving the price up there. There are rumors, of course, there are always rumors about this, that of a possible switch to a gold standard. And that's why all the banks are buying up all the gold. But that's a whole other story. Right now, we're just waiting for institutions to get on board with Bitcoin. I think the point, the two are connected in this. We've been talking about gold a little bit lately. If we do have some type of currency standard switch, people are going to be looking for safe havens. And of course, we believe that Bitcoin is one of those. I think Novogratz would agree with that. And especially when he's talking about institutional investors, that's why they would come to Bitcoin, because they would be looking for a safe place to put their money if we do have some kind of currency reset. Whether or not that's going to happen this spring, I have no idea. But there's a lot of chatter, and I just thought I'd throw that out there. Let's take a look at what he says. He's realized haven't tweeted about crypto in a while. I told you, it's been quiet from a lot of these folks. It's a grind. Well, you should be grinding. Don't think we head north for at least a few more months. Always takes longer for institutions to move. Very confident they will. I wonder why he's so confident. Tons of activity under the hood. Stay the course. He had set a 20,000 Bitcoin price target for 2019. The protracted market slump has caused many a crypto enthusiast to scale back their exuberance, and he's one of them. 2018, he boldly set a 10,000 Bitcoin price target for the end of the first quarter of 2019. He also predicted that Bitcoin would top $20,000 this year. But as the market slump continues with no signs of an immediate reversal, Novogratz has now apparently adopted a more sober outlook. Basically, just hang in there, guys. That said, don't expect Bitcoin stalwarts to jump ship anytime soon. We're all hodling. We're at the beginning of February, and there's almost 11 full months left in 2019. I don't really know why this writer had to throw that in there. I don't really care how many months there are in 2019. It's not like the Bitcoin market is going to disappear at the end of 2019. If it takes a little longer, we know the halving is coming in May of 2020. There's going to be a ton of activity then, and we also know that if institutions don't want to pay a premium for the Bitcoin, they better get it now, because once we get to fourth quarter, you're probably going to see the price of Bitcoin start to jump, and into the first quarter of 2020, again, moving upwards as the news about the halving, as the fact of the halving starts to get built into the price ahead of time. Jumping back down here, crypto evangelists like Dan Moorhead, the CEO of Bitcoin investment firm Pantera Capital, says it's time for those with short-term mindsets to stop freaking out. Why? Because the industry has weathered bear markets before, and this one is different from the others. I don't think that those people who are freaking out are necessarily the people with short-term mindsets. I think it's a lot of people that bought on the way up to 19K and on the way back down to 10K, thinking it wouldn't go any lower than that. And they're just sitting on what Bitcoin they did buy at that price, waiting for it to go back up. I think that's a lot of it. In the previous one, I had more of a worry in the pit of my stomach about whether blockchain was actually going to work. And the previous one, of course, is he means the last bear market. With this one, the underlying fundamentals are much, much stronger than they were in the 2014-15 crypto winter. And I think that's something that we all need to remember. Hash power is up. The Lightning Network is going to be coming online before too long for all of us to use. It's working now that the channels are becoming more numerous. The transaction amount is going up in all of the tests that they're running. So I think we're going to have some good things coming. And of course, we've got platforms, meta exchanges like yen.io that are going to allow us to move between coins very easily, arbitrage across different exchanges, and pay one another right there on yen.io for all kinds of things. So there are good things happening in terms of the fundamentals. And we need to keep listening to the few who do versus the many who talk. Critics may say, and this is actually a really important point, we've got to focus on the few who do, because so many people talk but aren't really contributing to the space otherwise. Critics may say that Bitcoin bulls like Dan Moorhead and Mike Novogratz, Winklevoss twins, and Circle CEO Jeremy Allaire are unrealistically optimistic, and that's probably because they have skin in the game. Now, you could say they own so much Bitcoin that they talk it up to keep the value up, but you, if you look into these guys, they're all investing in the infrastructure of Bitcoin. So they're talking it up because they're building it up, and they want to get everybody ready for adoption when it finally comes. And that's the point here. They've invested a lot of their own money in the success of the industry. Therefore, they're highly motivated to ensure it thrives. But they're investing their own money in the industry because they believe in it. They think that it's good for people. Last month, Novogratz increased his own holdings in Galaxy Digital to 79% after acquiring an additional 2.7 of its outstanding shares for $5.4 million. The former Wall Street banker is now Galaxy Digital's single largest shareholder with 221 million shares. If that's not a sign of conviction or personal accountability, it's hard to say what is. In response to skeptics who are gleefully cheering the current abysmal state of the market, Novogratz sagely points out that revolutions don't happen overnight. And of course, he means that in this case, a scenario where the people get control back over their value. And here we have Jack Dorsey and Tim Draper, both of whom have been speaking very highly of Bitcoin. Jack Dorsey does believe that Bitcoin is going to become the money of the internet. He's looking at tools to help Twitter users begin to embrace it. You can read about that in other places, but there always have to be those who said, mm-mm, not going to happen. A trader. He's going to tell us Bitcoin will crater into extinction. I wonder who this trader works for. Meanwhile, skeptics are betting that the crypto market will crater into extinction. They're probably shorting it. Hopefully they'll get wrecked. Not surprisingly, the most vocal opponents are people from traditional financial institutions and legacy banks whose existence is threatened by the rise of the crypto industry. 3 weeks ago, futures trader Anthony Grisanti predicted that the Bitcoin price would soon tank below 3,000 amid a mass sell-off. And maybe it will, but will it be forever? Mm-mm. Oh, look at this. Grisanti is an analyst at CNBC. That means do the opposite, who previously traded energy futures at Bear Stearns. Like other crypto naysayers, Grisanti believes it's only a matter of time before Bitcoin totally collapses, like Bear Stearns. He claims that whenever Bitcoin prices rally a little, it's because people are liquidating their position. Is that really how it works? You mean when they liquidate, when they sell their Bitcoin, price goes up? I don't think that's the way it works. I think when people who hold a lot of value start to sell that value, the price goes down. It's a little strange. It's when people don't have it and they're trying to buy it, the price goes up. You think this that Grisanti would understand that. Grisanti's fellow CNBC commentator Scott Nations also blasted Bitcoin. It's like they just get together and they say, we're going to tear up anything that isn't the traditional banking system. He says it has no value. He also dissed millennial crypto fans, saying they're too inexperienced to understand they're witnessing a bubble that's bursting. If you're in your 20s, I know there are people out there in their 20s watching this. So CNBC thinks you're an idiot, by the way. If you're in your 20s, you are an idiot. You have never seen an asset bubble, and you certainly couldn't possibly read about it because you don't read anymore if you're in your 20s. You were a teenager during the housing bubble, idiot. You were not even a teenager during the dot-com bubble. Well, baby idiot, this is a bubble, and right now it's coming unglued. What is your reaction? I don't know. Cry, baby. No. But this is ridiculous. And why Scott Nations feels like he's got to blast an entire generation of investors who are going to redefine the way value is collected, stored, and spent is absurd. I guess he thinks he can scare them out of crypto. You think they're watching CNBC? And that's the thing. You know, Nations feels like he can go after people in their 20s. Mostly because people in their 20s have no clue who he is. So, I guess the point is here, if you work for CNBC, keep chattering. We don't care. We're paying attention to the people who are building. Whatever issues you have with Jack Dorsey about Twitter censoring or Tim Draper on Open Borders. And they both have positions there that make me scratch my head. You gotta remember, these guys are building the crypto environment. So let's jump over here, another CCN story, and all of them are in this particular news bit, about Quadriga CX and this amazing story of about how almost 200 million in crypto is just gone. Maybe it says, the headline here says it's gone forever. We don't know that it's gone forever, but it's definitely gone. And it's because their owner, Gerald Cotton, died in India due to complications of Crohn's disease. We'll get back to that in a second. But his wife is claiming that she has no idea how to access his laptop, as we'll see here. And the exchange disclosed his death in early January. His wife, Jennifer Robertson, stated that Cotton was solely in control of storing user funds in cold wallets. I mean, first of all, why is she the one coming out and saying that this was the case? I'm just flabbergasted. I almost have no words for what's going on with this company. I hope that everybody in Canada that's involved in cryptocurrency, that you're investigating, that you're keeping your eye on your particular exchange, if it's still operating, get your value off of it. Just get it into your own private wallet and make sure that you have the private keys. So she says he was solely in control of storing user funds in cold storage wallets, which of course is just rife for abuse. Crypto cold storage refers to a wallet that's not connected to the internet and stored offline. Usually major digital asset exchanges like Binance and Coinbase store a large portion of their funds in cold storage to prevent hacking and security breaches. However, there's often an infrastructure in place in the form of a multi-signature system, which means multiple people have to sign off on the movement of funds to ensure that the exchange can withdraw funds under the most unlikely circumstances. In the case of Quadriga CX, the founder and CEO was solely responsible for overseeing the funds, and since he passed away, no one could access the funds that he previously maintained. The normal procedure, according to the affidavit, was that Quadriga CF founder and CEO Gerald Cotton would move the majority of the coins to cold storage as a way to protect the coins from hacking or other virtual theft. So his wife has hired a consultant to attempt to decrypt the laptop to potentially gain access to the private keys, I guess, to keep Quadriga CX's user, keep them in business. So there's a lot of questions, and they're here in this article about what is going to happen if the exchange can't recover the funds. Who knows what's going to happen? The company has said that they've been trying to recover the funds. They don't know if they're going to be able to. Obviously, there's class action lawsuits underway, but depending on what the exchange's current assets are, even if Quadriga CX lost a class action suit, I mean, I don't know, do they have the assets to cover it? So it's really strange. But it gets stranger because of this detail of his death. All we have is this affidavit, this statement of death from his widow, and people have started looking into this to see what the heck is going on. And so now there seems to have been some movement from Quadriga's CX's crypto, moving from their wallets, and people are starting to wonder, Why is there movement here? If there are coins in cold storage, I mean, what's going on? Is this guy really dead? I mean, I think that ultimately that's the question. That's what I'm just trying to get to. And I'll just get into this just a little bit. I'm so blown away by this whole thing. I really don't have a whole lot to add other than this thing just really fascinates me. But according to several reports, some of the funds from the missing 100. Now, this number's changed. Missing 150 million holdings of Canada's biggest crypto exchange, Quadriga CX, could be moving. On Saturday, CCN reported that Quadriga CX lost more than 190 million in funds stored in both crypto and fiat as the CEO has sole control over user funds passed away. In a strange turn of events, some industry experts have expressed skepticism towards the case as wallets connected to the exchange's hot wallets started to move. A Reddit user with an online alias of Palhello studied all major wallets that interacted with the exchange's hot wallet. The user discovered that several wallets had initiated transactions fairly recently after Quadriga CX's case was publicized. The user claimed that the four addresses evaluated in the research have been controlled by Quadriga CX in the past. Any address that has input into the hot wallets or wallets that are fully in control of Quadriga and could also be an address that belongs to a Quadriga user whose private keys belong to the company, the Reddit user said. The user added that regardless of the situation, if the private keys held by the CEO were lost, the wallets should not be able to initiate outgoing transactions. The user said, if these are really cold addresses, there should be no outgoing transactions. If they're a part of a cold wallet, there should be no outgoing transactions from them if the private key is lost. So what they're saying is that since the announcement of the death of CEO Joe Cotton, there has been some movement out of cold storage. If these keys are lost, there shouldn't be any movement. So what's going on here? And while it cannot be said definitively that the four wallets which interact with Quadriga CX's hot wallet are cold wallets, they could also be big hot wallets owned by other people. So there's still a lot of question here. There are new calls for investigations. Jesse Powell, the CEO of Kraken, a major crypto exchange that operates in both U.S. and Canada, said we have thousands of wallet addresses known to belong to Quadriga CX and are investigating the bizarre and frankly, here we go, finally, unbelievable story of the founder's death and lost keys. I'm not normally calling for subpoenas, but if the Royal Canadian Mounted Police are looking into this, contact Kraken. That's interesting. I think that they're now starting to think that Joe Cotton is still alive and is somewhere in India and has absconded with all this money. Of course, by now he could be somewhere completely else. And again, it gets to the whole issue of dealing with an exchange that doesn't have a multi-sig system to secure its cold storage. You got to look into these things, and we've got to help our people look into these things. So this was really strange. I'm not going to go into it anymore. But again, yeah, this situation could have been prevented. This is not something that should have been happening. This company needs to be shut down. This is absolutely bizarre that they would allow this to go on. It's almost like that Cotton was planning this from the beginning. It's almost like he was thinking that if I can just get my hands on a couple hundred million dollars worth of crypto assets and I can get them away from everybody without them seeing it. But at some point, if the majority of it is still in the cold wallet, they're just going to have to keep an eye on that and see if he moves anything from it. So a little craziness there. In case that wasn't enough craziness, let's go ahead and wrap up with this. An exclusive John McAfee interview on CCN that he plans to run for president from international waters. This one was interesting to me for this reason, and I'm pretty sure they were talking about him, but I was doing some traveling in Florida recently, and I'm just in a Pilot, you know, one of those gas stations that, you know, take care of, you know, they got a Wendy's in there and, you know, they've got clean bathrooms and they take care of the truck drivers, all of that. But they were talking, and I didn't catch who they were talking about, but it sounded like they were describing John McAfee. But they were talking about this guy. He's on the run and he hasn't paid his taxes. And boy, I don't care what his case is. If he hasn't paid his taxes in years, you know, listen, I'm an everyday guy and I'm paying my taxes. And he needs to pay his fair share. And that whole fair share argument, it always catches me kind of in a sensitive spot. Because, of course, what is our fair share? Who gets to determine that? And that level seems to be all over the map, just in terms of actually having to pay your taxes. And then you start listening to these politicians who come in and they want to whip the masses up into a fervor against us versus them, and start to say that, wow, if you're rich, you ought to pay 70% or 90% of your income in taxes. So according to John McAfee, as he goes through this article, he's been saying, I haven't had any income. Well, I don't know about that. People have been paying him to shill coins. But, you know, if he's been doing that off-site, out of the United States, you know, is he still responsible for taxes? Well, there's rules on this. And you know, even if he believes taxes are theft, the law is a law. And he makes a statement, draws all of our attention to the issue, which is probably his point. But he's got to add a little craziness to it. And so in addition to resisting the IRS on principle, probably, he's going to continue, apparently, to run for president. Always keeps it interesting. And that's, I think that more than anything is what amuses me about this man. I don't know that I would support him. I'm not sure I trust what he says. I think there are things that he may know behind the scenes. Who knows the conversations he's had with people over the years with the kind of money that he has in his pocket. But running for president from international waters, he's going to make a statement. In 2020, U.S. presidential candidate and alleged fugitive John McAfee is hard to reach. I don't know, 2020, that's a weird place to start. He only speaks in 5-minute intervals on the phone, hanging up and returning to the call hours later from a different oceanic location on his yacht. This, he says, is to make it more difficult to trace the call and pinpoint his location. So he's running from both for president and from the law. This thing says tongue in cheek, and McAfee himself, or McAfee, however you want to pronounce his last name, says he hasn't filed a tax return for 8 years. I'm going to let him speak for himself here. Why? One, taxation is illegal. Okay, principle. Number two, I paid tens of millions already and received nothing in services. Okay, well, that's just because we pay taxes doesn't mean we're going to get something in return. And technically, his livelihood was protected, and the court systems gave him the ability to pursue due process if he was wronged in any way. So you could say he has, and in fact, received something. And three, he's done making money. He says he lives off of cash from McAfee Inc. My net income is negative. Sure, I guess I don't know about that. If he's making money from shilling coins and other ICOs, but I'm a prime target for the IRS. Here I am. What does that mean? Here I am. Staying away from the IRS. As previously reported by CCN, McAfee took to Twitter recently to state that taxation is illegal. We just read all that. McAfee says that he and his wife have been indicted. Okay, let's get to the part about the president. He then announced that he would be running his presidential campaign on the run from the government while living on a yacht called the Freedom Boat. Okay, how is he going to do that? So no presidential candidate in history has campaigned while on the run from the government, which raises the question, how's that going to work? Well, we have the internet, and he knows how to use it. The answer, according to the former enterprise security software mogul turned crypto pumper, is technology. I will be using surrogates. So he references this meme where you see his face and, you know, in front of all these people, and basically he's asking them to stand in for him. So what he wants to do is hire surrogates to attend events in his place, equipped with cameras feeding live video to his hidden location, wireless speakers to enable him to give speeches and respond directly to individuals during conversation, and of course, wear a mask of his face to give the impression that it is McAfee himself standing on the podium or working the room. Yes, I'm still running for president in the Libertarian Party, which kind of makes the Libertarian Party look a little crazy, but it's certainly going to be entertaining. I will be using surrogates, debates, presentations, keynotes, etc. They will wear a mask of my face and be equipped with a small speaker attached to a smartphone. I will be able to see who I'm speaking with and orally respond. But of course, he doesn't intend to be president. This is a platform for him. He states that his singular goal is to liberate the American people from an insane and controlling government that has become our master. that's going to be an interesting campaign. If he is able to successfully run it and put that message out there, it will definitely make people talk. He strongly advocates the use of privacy-centric cryptocurrencies to take power away from the IRS and allow citizens to hide their income and refuse to pay taxes. It gets not really possible at this point. There are some privacy tokens, but the majority of the cryptocurrencies being used absolutely can be tracked. McAfee told CNN that his constant criticism of the IRS is what has provoked the indictment. I've been speaking out more and more against the IRS, both in state when I keynote and also on my social media. I think they just had enough. Privacy coins combined with distributed exchanges create an entirely anonymous and private economy. They cannot be shut down or regulated by any legislative or physical means. If a large percentage of the population adopts them, then there will be no way for the IRS to levy income taxes. That's not true. Of course there will be, because all these people still have to work. And if the IRS has to go directly to the employers by the fiat of Congress and take the taxes before the people get paid, they'll get their money. And I think that he's drawing attention to some important issues, but if he thinks that cryptocurrency is going to stop the government from getting their taxes, it's just simply not true. The government will figure. I mean, I'm sitting here reading this article, never having heard this statement before, and it took me about 3 seconds to come up with a strategy for collecting the taxes. You don't think the IRS can figure that out? So it's worth noting that his campaign does not have any other policies. As his website states, do not ask me about immigration, foreign relations, education, etc. I have no idea. Those claiming that they do are lying to themselves, or if not, they are purposely lying to you. We must first be free. Freedom for the people is my only goal. When asked about the nature of his campaign, McAfee told us, CNN, I do not intend to be president, adding, if I won, I would stay home. Okay. Well, I don't think he needs to worry about that, but he's going to generate an awful lot of articles, and there are a lot of people who are going to start looking into crypto because of what he says. Of course, they're going to think that it's nutso magic internet money because the guy talking about it is going to sound like a criminal. Just saying. You can let me know in the comment section below if you think that John is good for cryptocurrency. Maybe it's one of those things where all press is good press. I don't know. Every time somebody says that cryptocurrency or Bitcoin is used for money laundering, we get another opportunity to say, have you read any articles about these banks? Take a look at what Deutsche Bank has been doing. Then you'll really see what money laundering is. So just some thoughts there. Let me know in the comment section below. Love to hear more from you on the Bitcoin.pub. Little craziness out there between all the Bitcoin bulls jumping back in here in January saying, hold tight, hodl on to the missing crypto and Gerald Cotton. Where is he? John McAfee running for president from a boat in the ocean. We don't know where he is. Lots of fun things going on. Hope to see you soon. Oh, be sure to smash the like button. Definitely need you to do that. That's all I got. Talk to y'all later.